Blog Talk Radio.
Are you as excited as I am to finally get back to some NHL and OHL, AHL, college hockey talk? Well, this is your host, AtWolf3328. I'm back at it again after taking almost a year off of doing the show, but due to popular demand, I am back and ready to host a weekly program again that's been going on for at least 5 years now, the Old Time Hockey Show. We have guests from all around the league, characters from in the media, former players, coaches, assistant coaches, guys who used to play Sabretooth. You know, we bring them all on. I even had Conehead in 1 week. So we get them from all over, and I'm excited to get back into it and host the show for you. Today's lineup includes Bill O'Hare from the Herd Report, who follows the Buffalo Sabres for a local Buffalo-based blog. He's going to talk to us about how the season is going so far, get his thoughts on the moves Tim Murray made to build this franchise, the Jack Eichel, the rookie that was picked up second overall at the NHL draft back in June, get his thoughts on how he's progressing. We're also going to have Zig Fricassi on from Sirius XM Radio. Zig's a big hockey fan, huge Bruins fan, I should say, as well. Right now, Zig has a show on Sirius XM Radio nightly. He does mostly NFL now, but back in the day, he was all over the hockey scene. He worked in Buffalo as a studio host at WGR Radio 550. Spent a lot of time out in Las Vegas, and he'll be joining us in the first hour. And later tonight, we'll have Jim Fink. Check in. Jim Fink is with Buffalo Business First, and he's been covering the Buffalo Sabres since the early 70s. And that's our lineup for tonight. If I can get any more guests in there, I will let you know. But right now, that's the lineup for today's show. If you want to call in, if you have a hockey question, or if you want to talk about the Sabres or your favorite team, feel free. The number to get in is 347-934-0157. Again, the number 347-934-0157, and I'll take your calls and I'll answer your questions as it relates to hockey. I have not been down to the Sabres, to First Niagara Center this year to cover a game. I've been to a handful of practices. I attended the Tampa Bay Lightning game. Took my one-year-old to his first hockey game. We lasted about 2.5 periods before I couldn't contain him any longer. He got the better of me that night, and we headed for the exits early in the third period there. Sabres, of course, lost that game, but it was a good one. It was a good one either way, and I was happy to be there. I actually, earlier this month, got a chance to go on a road trip. I was in Dallas on business, and I just so happened to catch the Dallas Stars-Edmonton Oilers game. And let me just tell you something. Those fans in Dallas are big hockey fans. They are no joke. Back in the late 90s when the Dallas Stars beat the Sabres for the Stanley Cup, you know, I thought Dallas was absolutely a total hick town. I didn't take them seriously at all, but boy, was I wrong. They did everything right down there in Dallas. It's American Airlines Arena, and got a credential for the game, able to sit up in the press box, and it was Connor McDavid night, and he actually got his first NHL goal while I was there. It was incredible. It was a weak goal. I'm sure you've seen the highlights time and again. But Connor McDavid's first goal, I was actually there in Dallas in attendance. And right after he scored that goal, I took the escalator all the way down to the I wanted to check out, you know, the arena. I wanted to walk around a little bit, maybe grab some nachos or something. But I found the team store. So I went in the store and I said, you know what, let me get a puck. I collect pucks, you know, every team, things like that. Yeah, I like to collect pucks for whenever I go to a visiting arena. So I went and I saw these pucks out there, and I was standing. It was very busy, number one. Let me just tell you, the store at the game was bumper to bumper. I mean, you could hardly move. But I went in front of the display where the pucks were, and I couldn't believe it. But there were four pucks right in front of me from the pregame skate. Okay, and they were used in the pregame skate by the Oilers and Stars, and you can see there were clearly they were actually still pretty cold because they do freeze those pucks. So I knew they were legit. Had a nice Dallas Star and Edmonton Oilers stamp on the top of it, and you know, so it had the NHL game, what number it was. It said they were, and it came with a you know, a letter certification, all that stuff. I grabbed all four. Originally, I thought they were $9 a piece. I couldn't have been more wrong. They were actually $29 a piece. So at pretty much 30 bucks a pop, I grabbed four of them. My wife flipped out, wanted to know what the hell I was doing with four pucks that cost over 120 bucks. I said, honey, calm down. Now, again, we're 2,000 miles apart, whatever it is, but she's telling me, why in God's green earth were you buying four pucks from a hockey game? I mean, one is sufficient, isn't it? I said, sweetheart, this pregame puck, it's going to be a commemorative puck. I can sell these things easy on eBay, Craigslist for hundreds of dollars. If I can get Connor McDavid to sign one of these bad boys, I'm sending my kid to Harvard, and I'm going to be able to pay for a big-time school. So I do have the four pucks. Now I just got to kind of, I don't know, become like the paparazzi and get Connor McDavid somehow, some way. I got to corner him and get him to sign these pucks for me. But so that was interesting. But I'm telling you right now, that the fan base down in Dallas is insane. Those fans were awesome. They were great fans. Press box is beautiful. A lot better than the one in Buffalo. Really nice people up there. They really hooked me up good. And after the game, the Dallas Stars locker room, if you live in Buffalo and you've ever played hockey and went to Lincoln Arena, those locker rooms is equivalent to what the Dallas Stars have. It was ridiculous. That was the worst part of the entire game, was having to go to the Dallas Stars locker room, and literally, it was tiny. Embarrassing for an NHL pro team. Now, their media center, where Lindy Ruff did a press conference after, was 10 times the size of what they have in Buffalo. Now, the Dallas media, there's about five of them, maybe five. Now, because Connor McDavid there was about 13 or 14 guys up there, mostly Canadian press. After the game, Lindy Ruff's press conference was attended by about five guys, including me, who's from Buffalo. If I wasn't there, it would have been maybe three or four. But their press conference room was immense. You could have fit 30 or 40 guys in there. Easy. I don't understand it. Anyways, Dallas has to do a better job with that locker room. I was still impressed with the facilities. There was actually going to be a Dallas Mavericks game the next night, so they had about 300 people plowing through that place trying to break down the NHL game from that night and getting set up for the NBA game that was going to be happening on the next night. So that was what happened in Dallas. I'm going to bring in a guest. I told you earlier my first guest of the day was going to be Bill O'Hare, who is with the Herd Report. And Bill O'Hare is the former co-host of Buckets and Dan Sportsland, the number one sports show at Cortland University. You may remember him. But Bill is with me now. Bill, good evening. Welcome to Old Time Hockey. How are you?
I'm great. Frank, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure being on the other side of the mic here, and I enjoyed hearing that story. That was pretty awesome. I didn't know you were in Dallas.
Yeah, I went down to Dallas for some business. Had nothing to do with 300 level. But I just, you know, I looked at the schedule and thought maybe I'd catch a Stars or a Mavericks game. I could have, if I planned this right, seen Toronto and Texas, but I blew that. But I could have. They told me I would have been able to get a ticket too. $30. I could have got somewhere out way out, you know. But I could have got a game to that playoff game. I could have got a ticket to the playoff game. But I'm not a Blue Jays fan and I'm not a Texas Rangers fan, so I said forget it. But anyways, that's a story for a different day. I'll let you punch me in the face for not going to that game because I did have a chance to go to that playoff game and I didn't. But I did go to the Dallas Stars Edmonton Oilers game. I noticed it on the schedule about 3 weeks before I made my trip. I hooked up with a PR guy down there, and they welcomed me with open arms. It was awesome. So if you ever get down that way, do yourself a favor, hook up with the Dallas Stars PR guy and tell him, hey, I'm here with the Herd Report, and I want to talk to Lindy Ruff, and they'll hook you up. So I got a one-on-one with Lindy after the game and all that, and he had no idea who the hell I was, did not remember me, and that's fine. But Dallas is coming back, and I think they'll be in Buffalo in just a few weeks. So I will be there again, and hopefully we'll be able to hook up again. But Lindy has got that Dallas Stars team playing. They're really good. That's a really good team. And I'm telling you right now, they will be there. If they can stay healthy, I would imagine that Dallas Stars team is going to be there come April. We'll see what happens, but I believe they're 6-2 right now. So,
yeah,
6-2, right behind Nashville.
Yeah, right behind Nashville, and they play. I think they play Anaheim tomorrow, who's actually playing Chicago right now, and Anaheim's 1-5. Kind of surprising for a team like that. I thought they'd be off to a bit of a better start.
Anaheim, Columbus, and Boston are some teams that need to get things figured out pretty quickly. Boston, Tuukka Rask hasn't looked great. But Anaheim, I don't know what the deal is out there. Bruce Boudreau, I'm sure he's on high alert right now. Columbus already made one coaching change. As Torts is back in the game behind the bench of the Blue Jackets. I don't think for a second that Anaheim is going to be waiting too long here. And tonight is a good time as any for Bruce Boudreau and the Anaheim Ducks to get that thing turned around and figured out awful quick because, like I said, they've already fired one coach this year. It looks like they're tied right now with the Blackhawks in Chicago. Of course, that game, well, it should be in the first period, right? 8:30 start?
Right. Yeah, I watched the start of it. Chicago is another team that's interesting. I was looking, you know, I was just watching the game. They popped up their first four lines. I didn't recognize too many names. It's kind of a different team there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, they are, you know, there's no Sad, there's no Oduya, there's no Sharp. Who I did see Sharp and Oduya down in Dallas, and actually Sharp, for a second, registered his first goal of the year that night, but they took it away from him. Ref kind of came in and blew the whistle a little bit too early, but they did review it. Either way, he wasn't given credit for the goal that night. But, Dallas has made wholesale changes. Or, excuse me, Chicago's made wholesale changes. It's not the same team that hoisted the cup a few months ago.
Right, absolutely.
But what's your thoughts on this Buffalo Sabres team? Are they where you thought they would be 8 games in, or is there something missing there as well? What's your thoughts on the Sabres so far this season?
You know, my general thoughts on the team thus far are, you know, they've done a lot of really, really good things, and I wasn't expecting them really to get off to too hot of a start. There's just too many new guys, and with a new coach, I think the smart people in hockey had to realize that this is going to take time. And I kind of put up maybe 15, 20 games it's going to take until we really see what we got. And I'm impressed just because of the numbers. I mean, this team is so much different than last year just by watching them. And they're fun to watch. The numbers are there. And for the first time, it's kind of funny, for the first time, we are struggling to have a good goaltender. And in Buffalo's, you know, recent history, I mean, we've been we've been real fortunate. We've had great goaltending, and it's been the opposite this year, and we know why with Lehner going down, and who even knows what we got with Lehner. But I think the big question now, and we'll talk more about it, but do they go out and try and trade for a goalie? You know, that's going to tell me where Murray really stands with this team, where their goals are for this season, because if they kind of just stand pat, I think it kind of tells people that, you know, this season is just going to be another developing season, which is fine, you know, because we can see they are going to get better and better and better. But, you know, if they don't go out and sign a goalie, it kind of tells me that, you know, the playoffs aren't really in the picture for them, at least from the front office point of view this season.
I'm going to go out on a limb right now and say that Tim Murray and Dan Bylsma are not under any pressure to make the playoffs this year. I'm just going to say that. I think Terry Pegula has a plan. I think Tim Murray definitely has a plan. And it's get us to a point where we're competitive every single year. We just went through two of the worst seasons this franchise has ever had back-to-back. Where it's now year three. This rebuild that started with Darcy Regier, who doesn't get enough credit for some of the players that are on this team right now, and some of the players that were brought in. Darcy will never get the credit he deserves. Possibly a lot of that is because he kind of was a bit of a jerk with the media and with others in the organization. But it's year three, okay? There's a lot of new players, a lot of new faces. I mean, obviously Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart. Reinhart's still here. He hasn't been sent down. And I don't know if they were waiting on some injuries to come for players to come back, but you got Foligno out now. You got Kane out now. And Reinhart actually has more points than Eichel. So he's playing well. He's a great centerman. I mean, he's an extremely skilled playmaker. And if you put a couple of nice players with Reinhart, he's going to make plays and develop scoring opportunities for his line mates, much like Eichel. Like, I've been impressed with Evander Kane to a point, but I've seen a lot of missed opportunities because either Kane was too slow to react or he just couldn't get the puck on the net. I've seen a lot of open chances that Eichel has delivered the puck right on his stick and had given him opportunities to put the puck in the net, and he hasn't been able to do it. So I wonder if Kane's even good enough to play on a line with Eichel. As crazy as that sounds, Eichel to me has been a step or two ahead of Evander Kane on that line. We'll get back to that. We'll come back to that. But you mentioned, does he bring in another goalie? I don't know if they will do that, of course. And the reason is because I don't know if there's another goalie out there that's available, that's even on the market.
Right.
When I was down in Dallas, that Nielsen from Edmonton got the start, he was phenomenal in that game. He was the only reason why Edmonton had a chance to win that game. That game should have been 30-2. But Nielsen was incredible. He's a backup to Cam Talbot. Buffalo has some history with Edmonton to a degree. Maybe they can work out something there. Peter Mrazek from Detroit. There's endless opportunities of players that are goaltenders that are available, but you're not going to trade for a guy like Carey Price, Pekka Rinne, Holtby, Dubnyk, Bishop, Crawford, Lundqvist, untouchables right now. So we have to look, if you're looking for another goaltender, you really got to find that number two guy. Al Montoya may be a number two guy that you can pry out of Florida, but it comes down to defense as well. Now, Buffalo is giving up, I want to say they're giving 25.8, okay, 26 shots a game they're giving up right now. They gave up 28 the other night. Yeah. He gave up four goals on 28 shots. The kid that they just called up, Ulmark, just gave up four goals. Two to three of them were horrible goals. but that's his first start. Yeah, I'll give him a pass. Definitely give him a pass. I said this earlier, Bill, on another show. I would have liked to have seen Allmark play against Montreal. Here's my thinking. That Devils game was a much – the Buffalo Sabres should have been able to beat the Devils. That was, to me, if they were going to win a game this weekend, it was going to be the Devils game. I didn't think they were going to beat Montreal with Lerner, with Johnson, with Patrick Waugh. I didn't think they were going to beat those Canadians. So I would have rather seen the rookie play in that game Friday night. I didn't want to, it's a throwaway game to me. They shouldn't have won it. And they got blown out as it was. So let Johnson play against the Devils, steal that game. It's a home game. But the powers that be went with Allmark on Saturday, and they went with Johnson on Friday, and they still came away with no points. Did have opportunities, though, in both games to take leads. The Devils, they had 2 1-goal leads and still lost that game. Bill, don't go anywhere. Hang on there. I'll get your thoughts in just a second. Let me just bring in Zig Fracassi real quick to join in on the conversation. Bill, don't go anywhere. I'll come right back to you. Zig Fracassi, Sirius XM Radio, is my guest now here on Old Time Hockey. He's been here in the past. He's back one more time. Zig, what's going on, buddy?
Frank, how are you, man?
Real good, real good. It's Frank and my co-host Billy O'Hare from the Herd Report, another Buffalo blog. We're just going back and forth on the Sabres right now, but you know, you're not necessarily an innocent bystander. You spend time in Buffalo, so you're going to go through the same hell we're going to go through, if you don't mind. What are your thoughts on the Sabres so far after 8 games this year? Have you noticed? Have you watched Jack Eichel at all?
Day, ironically, turned out to be the sickest thing I've seen all year long. So I think when it's all said and done, Eichel's going to be a contender, obviously, for Rookie of the Year. I think the Sabres have been, up until the game against Montreal the other night, guys, I thought Sabres have been largely competitive. They're more interesting to watch. It hasn't translated into the wins. But now with Kane being out and you know, I like Chad Johnson. He was with the Bruins a couple of years ago and was really good as a Rask backup, but he's not a guy who's going to play at 55 or 60 games. I agree with you guys. They got to do something about the goaltending there to help him out.
Zig, I got a buddy of mine who's a big fan of yours. Really enjoyed you listening to you when you were here in Buffalo at GR, and he does have Sirius XM in his truck, but he can only really listen, you know, on the way into and out of work. Now, he does work second shift, so he picks you up. But he had a question he wanted me to ask you.
Sure.
What is the national perspective of the Buffalo Sabres right now in regards to the money they spent and the product that's on the ice right now? What would the national perspective be in your mind on what the Buffalo Sabres look like today?
Probably be...
There's been no shot, not shy to, you know, give up the money and everything like that. Evander Kane, you know, that loss is going to hurt, but I think he was starting to show some strides. O'Reilly, I thought they overpaid for him a little bit, but he's a good grinder. And then you got Legwand, and I like that addition because here is a guy like Eichel, who almost 20 years ago was the second overall pick in his draft. So work out there. So this is going to be a grind when it's all said and done. I think you will see improvement, but I don't think, and a lot of my national colleagues would agree, you probably won't see the playoffs.
Thank you very much for that perspective. I agree with a lot of what you said. My buddy Scott, that threw the question, he's a season ticket holder. He's been a season ticket holder since going back in the days of the old Aud. And he was not a fan of what the Buffalo Sabres were doing organizationally in terms of tanking for Eichel, tanking to a degree for Reinhardt. Not a fan of it at all. He sits, you know, up in the 300 level. He sits with a lot of guys that, you know, $3,000 a year on tickets is a lot of money for these guys, you know, and they don't want to see a team ever laying down, and they don't even want to hear talk from radio stations, people in the media, fans, that this team needs to lose to get better. And a lot of these guys just, they don't want to hear it. You know, they want this team.
Yeah. Reality of that. So that's where I would just intercede and say, unfortunately, you're not going to probably get the top shelf free agents because they want to stay, or it's either warm, taxes are good, or quite honestly, there's more of a social scene. So that's what I would say to that.
Okay. Thanks for your insight on that as well. We've lost Evander Kane. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, got banged up during the game with the Devils on Saturday. The injury is not going to require surgery, but Evander Kane's a big loss. I was just talking to Bill from the Herd Report about this, and I said, Bill, the games I've watched, it looks like Jack Eichel's been, I'm going to say this, Jack Eichel's been the best player on the ice for Buffalo so far this year. If you want my honest opinion, I'm going to tell you Jack Eichel's been the best player on the ice. Second best has been Rasmus Ristolainen, for my money anyways. Evander Kane's just been a step behind Eichel, and Eichel's had Kane in position to score goals, put the puck right on the tape, and Kane hasn't been able to convert. So I don't know if Kane's still playing with, trying to recoup from an injury from a season ago, but now this latest injury, the lower body, Eichel, I don't know who they're going to put him with now on a line. I'll have to check out that morning skate report and see where he's going to go. But talk about the loss of Evander Kane for the Sabres right now at this point with a 2-6 record heading to play the Flyers in Pittsburgh.
Even though at this point he's a minus seven, the fact of the matter is he's just a guy who really,
Yeah, the fans are going to have to be patient. I like to look at games on a 10-game basis. I take the season, I divide it up by 10 games, and let's see how they performed in those 10 games. Buffalo is getting better. They're a much better team than what we've seen in the last 2 years. You know, it's been just one little play here and there that's cost them. And that's typical. That's typical of a young team that's trying to come together. But it looks like they're playing for 60 minutes, Zig. That was a problem the last couple of years, but looks like they're playing for 60 minutes a night, which is good to see. Prior to going down, Chad Johnson had like a 2.38 goals against average. That's pretty good. So they weren't getting the save, if you will, but he had been pretty consistent and steady back there. He's kept them in games. And there was talk that people were saying, you know what, we brought Lerner in, but this Chad Johnson's playing pretty well. In fact, there were a lot of tweets going on during that Montreal game that if Johnson kept playing well enough that, you know, maybe we didn't need Lerner and need to give up that first pick, but then the second period came around and, you know, Pacioretty's scoring, Weiss is scoring, and the final score is 7-2. But anyways, I think the Buffalo Sabres are going to be all right 25 to 30 games in. I think that's they're going to pick up their stride. They should get a little bit better goaltending when the defense shows up. The defense has to play better as well. Bogosian's been out. We'll see when he can come back and make a difference. It's still a young defensive core as well. McCabe's young. Ristolainen's still young. Of course, he's averaging 24 minutes of ice a game, but it's only really his third year in the pros. Josh George is getting older. Weber, he's a sixth or seventh defenseman on any team. Franzen hasn't come around just yet. His shot's pretty nice. We knew about the shot. He's been okay in his own zone as well. A lot of people were saying that he wasn't really good in his own zone, and he gets beat a lot, but I haven't seen that. I thought Franzen's been pretty good so far. Have you your thoughts on the Sabres from a defensive standpoint? Let's get a step away from the Sabres just for now because I'm sure my show goes to 10:30 and I'll be hammered with Sabre calls in the 10 o'clock hour and my head's already spinning talking about the Buffalo Sabres. Tonight there's a pretty big game in Toronto and from my perspective, you got the young Max Domi in town playing in a city where his father made the number 28 famous. Of course, I'm speaking about his father, Ty. Right now, Max Domi's Arizona Coyotes have a 3-1 lead over Toronto. See if I can't get some numbers here for you. Looks like Shane Doan scored, and Dahlbeck's recorded a goal, and so has Max Domi. Has a goal for the Arizona Coyotes, and they've caught my attention, Zig. Is this Coyotes team for real, or what's going on with the Coyotes here? They're up. They're having a hell of a start to the season here.
Yeah, they are. They're a game above 500. I think they close out their road trip against the Bruins tomorrow. The first time I saw Max Domi play a little bit in junior, watching games off the NHL Network. I gotta tell you, the kid skates like a wind. You tell that.
Yep, and Zig, just hang on one second here. The connection that you had for the last couple of minutes is kind of rough. I'm not losing you, but it's kind of rough, so I'm wondering if you can try hanging up and calling in again. But the connection started to go south on us there, I hate to say it. I'm back. I got my buddy Bill. Thanks for hanging on through that. Bill, you know, I know you caught most of that, but we're talking a lot of Sabres, and then we started talking about the tank. We touched on that a little bit. And you're a little younger than me, maybe 15 years younger than me. So I know that talking to a lot of fans in, say, the 15 to, say, 25 demographic, those were the ones that were, you lose everything. I don't care. I mean, we lose every game. We get this player, you know, next year, the one of the best players ever to play the game, possibly, or being touted as the next All-Star. You know, what's your take on all that?
Well, first of all, I think a lot of the stuff that Jig was just saying was just right on the money. I really agree with a lot of stuff he was saying. Listen, I know what you're saying, and you're totally right on with the 15 to 25 demographic there was really kind of all over the tank. And because I don't think that group understands the pride of winning and losing at that level, at the NHL level. But what I will say is and I was kind of neutral on the tank, the anti-tank thing, but it was kind of funny to see older guys kind of turn their opinions around once they saw the type of player that Eichel and McDavid were. So, for, you know, like, for example, my dad was like, all of a sudden, like, yeah, I don't care, we'll lose. You know, I think he was kind of shot, and I think a couple other older guys that I, you know, would talk Sabres with were kind of the same boat where they're like, you know what, I don't care anymore. We need that type of all-star player. And once they kind of watched Eichel and McDavid on center stage, they kind of gravitated towards the thought of having a guy like that. And I know, Frank, I know you disagree with that. But for me personally, I mean, the one thing I will say about the tank is it's over now, and I don't think people are really thinking about it, and I don't think that's going to come back to bite us in any way, and that's the past. And just through these first eight games, it's, I mean, I'm not thinking about it, and I think we have bottomed out, and now it's a different time, and, you know, their slogan is next chapter, and I think, you know, the chapter's going to start slow. But, again, we're eight games into something that is supposed to be a sustainable, long-term, successful franchise organization for the next decade. So, you know, we're six games into this, so I'm not ready to make any bold opinions, but, you know, just by looking at the numbers, I'm excited, you know, on how we have started.
Yeah, and I haven't necessarily changed my position, but I am glad that the season is over, because it was a brutal season to cover the Sabres. Whether you were on the side of tanking or not on the side of tanking, what have you, it was a brutal time to be covering that team. Because, you know, you were on pins and needles to a degree. You were on pins and needles. Here you are having to go into a locker room to talk to these guys who just gave it everything they had. And half the arena's cheering that they lost. And the other half is like, what the hell is going on here? Come on, let's go. We're better than this. And
yeah,
you know, unfortunately, they weren't. But I'm definitely over that. And, you know, there are guys that are much older than me. My Uncle Paul, who's had season tickets since the franchise began, he said, I don't care what they got to do to win a cup before I die. Damn it, just do it. You know, so he's fine. He's fine with what they did. He didn't care one way or the other. You know, at the end of the day, I want to see a good hockey game. I want to see all the players on the ice. You know, I'm paying a lot of money. I want to see these guys make those, you know, those cuts and those dishes and those big hits and everything. I want to see it all. You know, I want my money's worth when I go to a game. When I see, and I don't think that necessarily happens, but I don't want to see guys ever laying back or holding back on something. I want to see them going full bore. And I think anybody that spends their hard-earned money on a ticket to a game, whether it's the NFL, basketball, hockey, baseball, whatever, they want to see these guys give it their all. So over an 82-game season, that's another thing. It's a long season. In 82 games at this level, at that speed, it's a long season. I know Zig's back here, so I'm going to bring him back in. I'll keep you in here, Bill, as well. Zig, thanks for checking back in with us.
Sorry about the phone there, Frank, but this should be better now.
No problem. It's not much better. I got some questions I wanted to ask the both of you guys. And I'll start with you, Bill, your first question. My first question to you is, and we're only, you know, 10 games in or so, or 9 games in for the most part, who did you have in the Stanley Cup final when you looked at all these teams before they started their actual season? Who did you have in your Stanley Cup final?
I really didn't think about it much, to be honest, but if I had an Eastern Conference favorite from the get-go, it was Montreal. I looked at them a little bit, and obviously they're off to a great start, but I'll let Zig give his. I think he probably put a little more work into that than I did.
Well, as far as a preseason Stanley Cup final, I suppose it would have been in vogue to go back with the Chicago Blackhawks because they've won 3 times in the last 6 years. But I still think I have some questions about that simply because now, you know, Keith's going to be out another, 8 weeks or so. You've had to rehaul your roster. You lost some key guys in Oduya and Sharp and that kind of stuff. So now you're trying to sort of rebuild on the fly, even though you got your core guys like Taze and Kane and Seabrook and all that. So I'll tell you, I probably would have leaned towards Anaheim of all teams because, you know, they were so close last year. They have the strength in the middle. But all of a sudden, you know, now we're talking about Bruce Boudreau getting possibly fired if they don't win a game on this road trip. So it just goes to show you, you know, how fickle things could be. So I would have shaded towards Anaheim, and then I would have gone, and I'd still like Tampa to come out of the East. Steve Yzerman's done a terrific job with that franchise. Let's face it, maybe it wasn't as dire as it was like it was with the Sabres, but, you know, they had to bring in a lot of young guys, the Victor Hedmans and all that, to let them develop a little bit. You know, some nice little moves they made to bring in Matt Carl, give themselves some defensive depth. The trade for Ben Bishop I thought was absolutely huge. They fleeced Ottawa. Corey Conacher went in that deal. I don't even know if he's still in the lead now. You know, their issue, though, are they going to be able to sign Stamkos long-term? That's going to be something worth watching. But the East just looks so bunched. You know, everybody's on the Montreal bandwagon. I've seen enough of them this year. Yeah, they were great against the Sabres the other night, but there were games Price was like Houdini, stealing them games, and then after a while they became opportunistic. So I'm just not on the Montreal bandwagon as of yet, but I still think Tampa's very strong. And I tell you, I'm liking what I see from the Kings again as we go back out west. 5 wins in a row, Quick starting to look like Jonathan Quick again. And Milan Lucic, part of that big offseason deal with Boston, he's starting to blend in well too. So those are some teams I'm looking to watch as the season progresses.
Okay. Thanks for your answers on there, guys. I'm going to go Montreal and Zig for Chicago. I'm kicking myself left and right here. I thought Anaheim was gonna be much better than what they are, and,
right?
And I picked them. Anaheim-Washington final. I wanted to see Bruce Boudreau and Barry Trotz go at it for the Stanley Cup, but I'll stick by it for now. But I don't think Bruce Boudreau is going to make it, unfortunately. He's, you know, Zick and Bill, they say Bruce Boudreau was one of those coaches that might be, and he's only been with the Capitals, so how can anyone really know this? But his message may wear off quicker than others. I don't want to say he wears out his welcome like a Keenan, okay? But maybe he's like, who was the coach in Dallas when they won the cup in Philadelphia? The big guy.
Hitchcock.
Hitchcock. You know, he could come in. He's in St. Louis right now, and give him 2-3 years. He'll get you there, but then they quickly fall off. They shut him off. And, you know, he's on his last hurrah with St. Louis right now. They're Stanley Cup or bust, or he's out of there. But
yep.
Maybe Boudreau's message is not sticking like it should because, I mean, let's face it, they're having a tough time right now. And you're right, Zig, if they don't win a game in the next couple of games, Bruce could be gone, just like, you know, Richards in Columbus.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about that team? They closed out like a house on fire last year. They were unbeaten in their last 13, 14 games. Kind of made things interesting for that final playoff spot. But then you figure with the full bill of health, you know, having Johansson there for a long-term deal, long-term prospect. But now there's a report that came out that he had heart-related issues, had to be checked out over for the summer. Bobrovsky was so brilliant last year. He can't stop a beach ball right now. When you've got your high-paid goalie admitting that there is a crisis of confidence, first of all, how do you think that makes John Davidson, the guy who signed him to the long-term deal, feel? How did that make Richards feel? How does that make the defense and forwards feel? And when you admit something like that, that's some dangerous slope. And then, unfortunately, a good hockey coach in Todd Richards is now unemployed, while John Tortorella, who's the master of scorched earth, will try to get the Blue Jackets going. But you watch, within another 2 years, his act will wear thin, unless he says he's changed, which he claims he has. But I have to believe that to see it first.
You got to see that. Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you, and, you know, with Johansson now, Ryan Johansson has got some undisclosed illness.
Yeah.
I know he had that accelerated heart rate thing, at least over the off season. He had that. He was hospitalized over in the off season. He's right. 23 year old. He was kept out of Saturday's game. I wish I would have known that. I had him in my fantasy lineup that night. Could have taken him out at least. He was sick Saturday. They took him. They kept him home for treatment. Didn't play that night. And I don't know what the future is with Johansson or what. I know he was benched by Torts in maybe the first game. For parts of that third period,
yes.
Maybe the final 6-7 minutes he was benched. So, Torts is one of these guys that he has to pick on a player, and maybe Johansson's going to be it. But if he's changed, we got to see it. And
absolutely,
he's Mike Keenan part two. I thought he was just as tough as Mike Keenan was, and that. We're seeing it right now with the Bills, actually, with Rex Ryan. That bulliness, that those mind games these guys play, it just doesn't work. These players are different. Years and years ago, these hockey players, you threaten them with the minors. Are you kidding? These guys would play through anything. Nowadays, play them for the minors. I get sent down, I'm still making $3 million a year. Okay, send me down. What the hell? But years ago, a player wouldn't think twice of missing a game for a pinky or a sneeze or whatever. Nowadays, I'll keep him out. You can't get away with that anymore. So Torts has to change if he's going to have any kind of impact on the Columbus Blue Jackets and resurrect that coaching career, because he was a pretty good coach for a while. He's got a Stanley Cup ring.
Sure.
And he was in Buffalo for a while on the bench. Bill, what's the biggest disappointment of the season right now, would you say, Bill? In your estimation?
Well, Columbus, I never saw that coming. I was actually at that Columbus-Buffalo game, and Zig, I heard you say that about Eichel. The place was going absolutely bananas when Eichel made that play. Columbus is the biggest disappointment, and to me, I've being a first-year teacher, honestly, this is the least attention I've paid to the league thus far, because I've been so busy. But I will say, very surprised. I think it was a super, super bold move to go with Tortorella. I would kind of like to know what you think about that move. It's just very, very bold and somewhat surprising, because I thought Tortorella was probably going to do a couple years in the media before he got another shot.
What I thought about the John Tortorella move, I thought he was going to be in TV for a little while, but let's face it, Columbus is a team that obviously needs a jump start right away. And whether you like the guy or not, Tortorella can get into your face, can get into your grill. Because let's face it, you don't have, in reserve a Guy Boucher or somebody of that ilk who's coached recently in the National Hockey League. Because at this point in time, there's really nobody you could bring in unless you try to replace him with your coach from your AHL team, for example. So he was the guy who was out there. He was, staying in the game because he was doing TV. So they just felt compelled to do it. And let's face it, they've been a huge disappointment as far as the season is concerned. You take a look at a team, Boston's hovering around 500. Tuukka Rask can't stop a beach ball. They've been among a disappointment. Pittsburgh, they're hovering at 500. We talked about Anaheim. How about Calgary? They lost again tonight to the New York Islanders. Here was a team, solid playoff year, Bob Hartley, coach of the year, and now all of a sudden they're 2-6. Dougie Hamilton, their big offseason pickup, he can't seem to play defense all of a sudden. They lose Brody, who was a good blue liner. Ramo. Hell, now he's earning over $4 million on their farm team. So it just goes to show you what goes from one year to another doesn't necessarily translate. So those are among sort of the disappointments in addition to my thoughts on Tortorella.
Yeah, the Flames now have dropped, I believe, 7 out of their last 8. Bob Hartley, I'm sure, is going to start feeling the pinch. That seat's going to get awfully warm. He's a guy I really enjoyed watching coach. He's another he comes from that school. I want to say, like, to a degree, Tortorella. He's not as hard-nosed, but he's a tough coach to play for. Patrick Waugh's a lot like that. Those are my types of coaches, though. Those are my types of coaches, coaches that are there to coach and get the best out of you every shift, every night. Those are the kind of coaches I like. But I understand they don't last too long. They don't have a long shelf life. You know, they got to get in, do their job, and then they move on. I'd like to see Torch make it work in Columbus. Hopefully Hartley can get the Flames back on track, because there's nothing better than watching a good Calgary and a good Edmonton team play each other and a good Vancouver team. When those three teams are playing well, that's great hockey on a Saturday night. I watched that Detroit-Vancouver game. That was awesome to see, that 3-on-3 overtime. That was a real good game. Looks like the Leafs are now down 4-2. Van Riemsdyk just scored on a breakaway. Talk about – Bill, what's your – I mean, Bill, the Sabres lost out on Babcock. He's up in Toronto, and he's got his hands full with the Maple Leafs. What's your thoughts on where the Maple Leafs are right now, and what's it going to take for Babcock and Shanahan and old Lou Lamoriello to get that franchise back to where those fans need it to be?
It's going to take a lot, and just like Darcy said before he was showing the door in Buffalo, there's going to be some suffering up there. Absolutely. I think Babcock even mentioned, you know, this year, I think he said, I didn't realize how big of an undertaking this is going to be. And I think it's going to be a process. And look, in the NHL, it's not like college football where you could bring in a guy like John Harbaugh and all of a sudden things change. You know, it's going to be a thing over time. Just real quickly, maybe I just have a different point of view on this. I'd be so reluctant to just fire coaches who have established themselves after 10 games. You know, I was a little surprised about the Richards firing. You know, it was so early, you know, after playing so well late last year. It's October, and even with Hartley and Boudreau, I'd be very reluctant to pull the trigger and fire one of those guys this early in the season. You know, let the season play out 15, 20 games before any move is made. You know, you really can't dig yourself too big of a hole in October and really November. So that's my point on that. And then, yeah, with Toronto, it's going to be a while, and I think they're going to have to, you know, a few top picks, and, you know, hopefully get Strome playing well. And then, I don't know. I think it's going to be a while for them.
They drafted your buddy Bracco, but he's out in Boston, yeah. I believe, at BC or BU, one of those two schools. He'll be in the future plans, I'm sure. Zig, your thoughts on Babcock and Lamoriello and Shanahan working together in Toronto, and what do you think it's going to take for the Leafs to get back on top, if ever?
Well, let's not forget the Hall of Famer and legendary coach Jacques Lemaire, also part of the Maple Leafs scheme of things. So you got to give Shanahan a lot of credit. I mean, he's got the high-profile help, you know, for his team. I think they're in for a massive rebuild, and I think they've begun to show that at this particular point. As I look at their roster, there's only, what, three or four guys that are above 30 years old on that team. So they parted with Kessel. You know, that was a guy that was their most marketable. There's no what I would call franchise players on this team. And if they continue to struggle a little bit, it wouldn't shock me if teams start calling about Dion Phaneuf. Maybe they can get a little bit of a return for him. But the couple guys that I do like, and I've been impressed with them for a while, I think they just need time to develop. Morgan Rielly, you know, at 6'1", 205, has got a shot, I think, to be a very good, you know, power play type defenseman, somebody who can move the puck very well. I know Don Cherry's always been, you know, extolling the virtues of Nazem Kadri. This, though, I think is one of these type of years where he's got to show that he can finally assert himself as the top guy there. We've seen glimpses of it, but we've also seen some immaturity and him kind of acting out on the ice, and that kind of rubs me the wrong way. So I got to see more maturity from from, Nazem Kadri. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What,
I look at their
what you're saying about Kadri, what you're saying about Kadri, I the same about Lupul. He can get a little rattled during games and disappear on you. He's a little immature at times as well. He makes silly comments in the media. He's even done it here in Buffalo. I have a feeling that this roster, as we see it today, is going to look much different in March. I like Kadri, but I don't know if he'll make it through. I really, like you, I don't think Riley's going anywhere. I think Morgan Riley is right up from the Mike Babcock school. I think he's going to stick around. I like Pollock. I can never pronounce his name right. I like him.
Yeah.
And you got some good players there. Arcabella's not a bad player. They picked up Grabner from the Islanders. He's not too shabby. Van Riemsdyk's a guy you can build around. He's a top six forward on any team in this league.
Yep.
And does Fanuf make it through? There was talks that he wasn't going to make it through the summer, but he stuck around. I like Fanuf. I think he's a guy that I don't want to see them get rid of Fanuf. I think he's a pretty good quality player. Great hitter. He can change the momentum of a game on any shift. If he catches you with your head down, look out. I think those are guys that you can build around, but that roster is going to look a lot different come March, I have a feeling. It may get younger. I don't think it's going to get older. I think it'll get younger, though.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, again, if they're not in contention, though, if Fanuf is a dealing chip, a trading chip, he will give them a good haul. So it would, I think, accelerate their rebounding a little bit. And, Toronto, they were a team that tried to bring in, a lot of brand names, big name free agents, or traded for guys, and quite honestly didn't work. So, even at the introductory news conference, Babcock says, well, there's going to be pain. So he forewarned Toronto right then and there. This guy's a good teacher of the game. And again, he's kind of young there, especially on the blue line. It's going to take time for them to try to get back into contention as far as a playoff spot's concerned.
Have you guys been watching this goalie, Martin Jones, in San Jose? I'll start with you, Bill.
No, not really, but I thought he was a viable guy for Buffalo to go after in the summer.
Yeah, went to Boston and quickly came back. I believe went to Boston in the Lucic deal and then out to San Jose. Is that what happened there, Zig?
Yes, he was there literally for 5 minutes, so you didn't have to order your Martin Jones jerseys. Here's the thing, though. The Kings wanted Lucic, and the Bruins were at the point where they truly didn't know who their backup would be, so they figured they'd use Jones as a trading chip. And then ultimately, Sharks came calling to the Bruins, because there's no way the Kings and the Sharks would directly deal. So Boston was like the happy third team. So they got a number one pick and a couple of other players out of that deal. Martin Jones was a guy that, let's face it, wasn't going to play very much because Jonathan Quick is still a premier goaltender, although his early season struggles didn't show that. Martin Jones is, a youngster, obviously, who was highly thought of. And the way he started the season, he didn't even allow a goal like the first few games. But there's been a couple of outings against the Rangers. He allowed four against the Kings. Came back to look good against Carolina. So he's obviously their number one guy. He's 5-2 on the season. And the Sharks, I'm not sure what I think about them at this particular point, because he started stripping Thornton and Marlowe of, leadership responsibilities. That was kind of weird. But Jones is off to a good start. I think he comes back to earth a little bit, because we'll see how he reacts now playing 55, 60 games a year as opposed to playing, 15 or 20 as Quick's backup. But he's definitely off to a good start. But he was used as, the in-between, because the Bruins got a good haul for Lucic and then got more of a haul by trading Jones to the Sharks.
Now, that's real quick, the former Devils coach is now out in San Jose.
Peter DeBoer, yeah.
DeBoer, yeah. Now, I remember hearing, you know, Buffalo pretty much had Babcock tied up, and the Leafs had interviewed DeBoer that same day. And I believe DeBoer was heading to Toronto. And somehow, some way, I don't know if Shanahan made a last-ditch effort to Babcock or what, but within a 24-hour period, we had heard that DeBoer was going to Toronto, and next thing you know, the Sabres lose out on Babcock. He's in Toronto, and DeBoer's left without a home. Do you remember hearing or reading anything into that over the summer? Because that was a strange turn of events.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had not heard that, to be honest with you. And with all due respect to Peter DeBoer, who was a great junior coach and has had a degree of success in the NHL, he ain't going to sell tickets or interest. Mike Babcock, with his legacy, having taken – let's face it, I mean, he's won a Stanley Cup. He's been to some finals with Detroit, and also, don't forget, Anaheim back in 2003, who lost to New Jersey. He was the coach of that team.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Babcock, coach of the national team in Canada, is going to sell more tickets and interest than Peter DeBoer. Simple as that.
Los Angeles Los Angeles beat the Devils and DeBoer, who was the Kings, I believe.
That's right.
Now, another coach that has impressed me this year so far is that Hacksaw in Philadelphia, the college coach that came in, where was he, North Dakota?
Yeah.
Okay. Comes to Philadelphia. He's got them playing okay. They're 4-2-1 with 9 points. Not too shabby. Middle of the pack right now, but I like what I'm seeing out of Philadelphia and that college coach. They went out on a limb signing him. Ron Hextall, who had some familiarity with Hacksaw, is Ron Hextall's son played for him in college, so that's how they knew one another. He goes to Philadelphia, and they're playing okay right now. They're, along with Arizona, Philadelphia and Florida have really impressed me so far in the season, in the first 10 games.
Well, I could tell you, Dave Hacksaw is almost like, gosh, seemed like Rick Pitino of you know, the college ranks, if you will, or a Roy Williams, a Dean Smith, the guy who continually had North Dakota in the Frozen Four. I mean, it seemed like every year they've been in the Frozen Four. And you look at some of the guys who've come out of that recent program. I mean, Jonathan Toews, Drew Stafford played for the Sabres, T.J. Oshie, Zach Parise, some of the guys like that, Travis Zajac. So they're used to producing pros there at North Dakota, and I applauded when I heard Ron Hextall considering hiring this guy, because quite honestly, he was outside the box. Because usually, when you think of the Flyers, Mr. Snyder, you know, still has major influence in that team as the owner. He'd probably want somebody that had some kind of Philadelphia Flyer connection. But Ron Hextall being outside the box a little bit, saying, you know what, maybe we need to change the way we do things. Why don't we bring in a guy who's helped produce a lot of these NHL pros and work his system into it? I've been a big Dave Hextall fan for years. I like what the Flyers did there. He's a good teacher. They're kind of young on the blue line, but Giroux and Simmons and guys like that, they're going to keep them competitive for a while. And Mason's a good goaltender, so they're in good hands there with Dave Hextall in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I can't pull for the Flyers being a Sabres fan, but I'll tell you, I like the hire. It definitely went against the grain. It definitely wasn't part of the old school network, you know, the old boys club, whatever you want to call it. This was an outside-the-box hire, and it's good for hockey. Like I said, I'll never outright root for Philadelphia because of my allegiance living in Buffalo and all the torture we've taken from Flyers and Eagles and Phillies fans, what have you. But I'll tell you, I'd like to see this coach have some success in the NHL. Kind of wish it was with somebody else. But whatever, he's in Philadelphia and he's got those guys playing pretty well. Let's hope that he can keep it going for them. Pittsburgh, they're 4-4. Is it Mike Johnson there?
Yes.
On the hot seat, supposedly. There's some turmoil there. I know that they bumped, they split Kessel and Crosby up.
Right.
Which could work. I think they won the other night. Both of them had had a goal at least. Crosby might have had 2 assists Saturday. But Fleury's played well. Fleury's right up there with the top 3-4 goalies in the league right now. So he's playing well. 2.02 goals against average. 16 goals allowed in 8 games. That's not bad at all. But Kessel and Crosby weren't able to catch fire. Was it too soon, do you think, to break those guys up?
You could say that. I mean, let's face it. I watched, because I get the set of rice package, I watched enough games, and it wasn't for a lack of effort. You know, Crosby's, say what you will about him being a whiner or this and that, but the guy wants to win. He's a true top-shelf competitor, and, you know, there was a lot of concern about was he going to have to sort of take I got to get Phil involved, so let me pass him the puck as opposed to taking more shots. So I think that's where there was a little bit of a problem. So now you pair him with another world-class talent in Malkin. They're third in the league in goals against, but Pittsburgh, to me, Frank, is just a team that appears to be too top-heavy. And what I mean by that is you've got Malkin, you've got Crosby, you've got Kessel, supposedly all these stars, if you will. But then you look at the rest of the roster, you know, they Hornquist, I think, has been a good addition in the James Neal deal a couple of years ago with Nashville. But then, gosh, I look at that blue line. I don't know if I could identify, other than Letang, any of these guys out of a police lineup. I mean, Scuderi, they brought him back, but you wonder how much he has left. Mata's a prospect, but at times seems brittle. Lovejoy, you know, and then Dumoulin and Cole and Clendenning, they seem more like just guys than anything. Pittsburgh's an example of a team that you paid your two big stars a lot of money, and that ties up, what, about a fifth or maybe even a fourth of your salary cap, and then you got to go on the cheap to bring in everybody else. So that's a situation that I think could backfire in the long term, because you're hogging up your two big stars are hogging up so much cap room that you can't afford to bring in other guys that might be more serviceable.
Yeah, I agree there. They've surprised me so far this year to a point. I thought that there'd be instant chemistry between Crosby and Kessel and Malkin. And obviously Letang is a guy that can get the puck out of the zone and into the right hands. But that hasn't worked out just yet. And again, we haven't even played 10 games yet. But they've split Kessel and set up for the meantime. We'll see what happens. They play Buffalo on Thursday in Pittsburgh. On Wednesday, though, I believe they're playing the Caps, who have started the season off pretty well. I was glad to hear Barry Trotz benched Ovechkin. I don't know if Adam Oates would have been able to get away with that, but the Capitals have been a team that's underachieved the last 5 or 6 years or so. But I think with Barry Trotz there's a new sheriff in town. Obviously, I'm referring to Ovechkin and the alarm clock debacle from last week where he was benched.
Right.
And they got their butts kicked. They lost 5-0 that game to, I believe, San Jose. They got their butts kicked that night, but there's a new sheriff in town. Barry Trotz isn't going to put up with anything like that. Now, I don't think for a second Ovechkin would ever get dealt, but I think this will teach Alex that, hey, I need to settle down and take responsibility, and I got to be a better teammate. You know, because it was Ovechkin and Backstrom, but now you got Kuznetsov there, player of the week. It's not the Backstrom Ovechkin show anymore like it was before. You know, they've brought in some players there, and Holtby's a phenomenal goaltender. I did jump on the Washington bandwagon to a degree and pick them to win the Stanley Cup this year over Anaheim. Are you excited, or have you any thoughts on the Capitals thus far this season, and how do you think Trotz handled the situation with Ovechkin?
Well, I think it sent a message, obviously, that, you know, as you mentioned, with, you know, any previous coach, maybe Boudreau or whoever was there in more recent times there as the coach of the Washington Capitals, they would have probably tried to be an appeaser. But beneath that gangster-looking face that Barry Trotz has, he's a man who's very, very principled, and he doesn't care if, you know, you're, you know, the third-line defense or you're Alex Ovechkin. If you break a rule, you're going to pay for it, and I think the message was sent there. You mentioned Holtby. I think he's one of the best young goaltenders in the National Hockey League. I think they have arguably the best young pairing of defensemen in the league in Carlson and Osner. I know Pierre McGuire always raves about him, and now having watched him a little bit, I can see why. So they appear to have some balance. You know, they added Oshie in the offseason, the Troy Brouwer trade there with St. Louis. I thought that was a nice move actually for both teams. You know, Mike is a guy I've always liked, an honest player who's not going to take crap from anybody. Orloff is another youngster, so the Caps have a lot of speed. I just wonder with them, you know, again, if Ovechkin's your leader, is he going to be the guy to finally take it to that next level for all his hype and all his goals and all his, you know, spectacular play at times? The fact of the matter is the Caps have been an underachiever. You could say now they may have the best team that he's ever had around there. Can he take that next step like Crosby and Taves and these other guys, you know, Kopitar in recent vintage, you know, took their teams to that Stanley Cup level? Only time will tell if eight is truly great.
Yeah. They had some nice offseason acquisitions, Justin Williams obviously being one of them.
Yep.
He's a great addition into that locker room, and I thought they started that last year when they added Brooks Orpik, and I know that they probably paid a little bit more to land him, but they just took out one of the toughest defensemen in their division away from
yep.
one of the best teams in the division and threw him in their blue line. Now, Orpik, you know,
Niskanen,
he's still a
too.
Very serviceable – and Niskanen as well. Exactly. Two great pickups. And again, it's kind of like the Eagles taking DeMarco Murray away from Dallas. You're taking one of their best players away, and you're putting him into your locker room, into your lineup. And I took a beating a couple times last year for saying that this Capitals pickup of Orpik is probably one of the best free agent pickup moves of the season. Like, Brooks Orpik, what are you kidding me? They all paid him. He stinks. He's a this, that. He toughened that team up big time. You know, he got a lot out of Carlson. He helped Carlson's game out tremendously, maybe not necessarily playing with him, but just being there at practices in the locker room. He toughened up a lot of those guys, and I'm sure at some point he's had conversations with Ovechkin about being a better team guy, a better leader. He's the captain of that team, you know, and I'm sure Orpik's had those conversations with him. And, you know, obviously the alarm clock thing this year is a little bit of a setback for Alex, but that team, for the most part, is firing on all cylinders. They're much more mature now. Having a guy like Trotz behind the bench, a guy like Orpik on the blue line, and now you got Justin Williams, you know, I don't know if he's on the third or fourth line right now. I'll double-check on the depth chart where they're playing him. But those guys are the pieces you need to make long, deep runs into the playoffs. The Capitals were, what, a couple games away from getting to the Stanley Cup Finals last year? So I like the moves that they made, and that's one of the reasons why I picked Washington to win the Cup this year. And Ovechkin just needs to I hate saying this, but he's got to grow up and show up and play every night. And he's had some highlight reel goals already this season. But I do like what's going on in Washington, and I wish Barry Trotz the best. He's a good dude. He's a real good dude. I liked my conversations that I've had with Barry Trotz when they come to Buffalo when he was with Nashville. Very pleasant. very pleasant guy to deal with. Couple more things. Connor McDavid obviously is leading the score, all rookies in scoring with 9 points, I believe. Let me double check that. Yeah, he's got 9 points, just three shy of the league lead, which is shared by teammates Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, and David Krejci of your Boston Bruins. Krejci's in there with 5 and 7 for 12. He's also a plus two. One thing I want to ask you, because I know I got an Uncle Ted out there who listens to our show. I told him I was going to have Zig on. He was another big fan of yours, but mostly
you.
Because you're a Bruins fan. He's a Bruins fan. So he wanted me to ask you, though, are you also a Raiders fan? I didn't think you were. You're a Cowboys fan, aren't you?
Go back to the days of Roger Staubach, indeed.
Okay.
Tough
well,
loss yesterday.
You're not letting
him. What are you going to do?
Yeah. All right. Well, you're a good guy in his book because you're a Bruins fan. Talk about so far this year with Rask between the pipes. Has he been shaky? Too early to kind of talk about his struggles, if you will? He hasn't looked like Rask through, you know, 7 games. Your thoughts on the Bruins?
No, he hasn't. And I know my sources in Boston know that maybe that there's they're not going to use the term yet here, goaltending controversy, but I think it is a little bit of a concern. I think he'll play tomorrow night against the Coyotes. Thing about it was he actually had a pretty decent preseason. The Bruins actually had a pretty decent preseason, but then I saw some disturbing things. It looks like he wasn't squaring enough to the shooter. Some shots, routine shots, were getting through to him. Now, granted, in the game against the Flyers Wednesday night, which was on NBC Sports Network, when they were up 4-2, Miller tries to skate the puck behind the net, comes up, kicks in the foot, and then the Flyers are there for a layup. Then Simmons comes down the left side, absolutely ropes one on the glove side, so that tied the game. And then Giroux, I think, had a 5,000-mile-an-hour slap shot in overtime. And I'm telling you, Hasek or Waz not stopping that shot. So there have been some shots that no goalie's going to stop, but there have been some awfully routine ones that he hasn't stopped. Meanwhile, they picked up Gustafson, the former Leafs and Red Wings goaltender, who's actually been pretty good for him. Gives them a big target, and they obviously didn't think that Malcolm Subban was ready. They didn't think the kid we just talked about, Hackstall, a little bit earlier, goalie he had there, Zane McIntyre, who the Bruins think very highly of, he wasn't ready yet. And then obviously Smith, their goaltender from Providence last year, he wasn't ready. So in the end, they decided to go with Gustafson in there. So the goaltending's a little bit shaky. Defense, obviously, Chara missed the first portion of the season. Now he's rounded himself back. Seidenberg's skating again after the back injury, so maybe he's going to be coming back in another 3 or 4 weeks. The kid they got in the Lucic trade, Colin Miller, reminds me of a young Drew Doughty. He's going to be that good, but of course, he's got a trust me, he's got a cannon for a shot, can rag the puck, play the power play, and the way he kind of just comports himself out there reminds me a little bit of Doughty, which is why the Kings were very reluctant to give him up. But again, this is his first NHL campaign. Kevin Miller, very young on the blue line. Krug is emerging as a star. McQuaid is what he is. And so they're young on that blue line. And what they're trying to implement, too, is a new style. Don Sweeney, the GM, wants to start playing a little more like the Blackhawks as far as quick ups out of the zone from the defense as opposed to what Julian likes to do as far as layers and just being smart, you know, cross ice type passes. So they're trying to change some things there. Forwards, Krejci's been off the chain. The power play has been lethal. Bergeron just had a kid, so, you know, he's going to be few. They got in the offseason, has been hurt. He may come back tomorrow. Jimmy Hayes, the former Boston College kid, was acquired in the offseason. So the forwards look very, very good. The defense is still a question. They still have to get the goaltending settled. I still think when it's all said and done, Rask will play better, but I wouldn't be surprised if you saw Gustafson a little bit more for the Bruins, because they're trying to find themselves right now at 500.
Yeah, and again, it's a very long season. Zig had an issue with them trading Lucic, and you're a little closer to the action than I am. I thought, and I could be totally off here, that they ripped the heart and soul of that franchise when they traded Lucic. Now, that's an outsider looking in. Your thoughts on them trading Lucic, and did they have to move him? And, you know, just your thoughts on them trading Lucic.
I was advocating the trade, and I'll tell you why. Here's a guy who, granted, when he's focused, and those are the three words, Frank, when he's focused, is probably the best power forward in the game. But there were gaps last year, and this has actually gone on now for a couple of years. Even he was kind of questioning himself about how he was approaching the game. Now, it wasn't anything against his teammates, anything against Claude Julien, from what I could tell. But since the 13th season, when they made that run to the final, when they lost to Chicago in six games, he hasn't been the same. So there had been more buzz last year about 17 being, you know, basically on the ice, but somebody else is in that uniform, because he appeared to be unmotivated. He wasn't engaged like he was normal. And then all of a sudden, you're looking at a contract year. Guy's in the final year of his contract, and he's probably in his range is going to demand at least $6.5-7 million, if not more. I think the Bruins looked at this, and Don Sweeney, who I have a ton of respect for, and people don't understand what he did in the offseason, but actually, I thought what they did was brilliant, because it was overdue. Chiarelli didn't do this, was try to keep the team competitive but replenish the prospects at the same time. That's why he stockpiled those draft picks in the Hamilton trade, and he got more draft picks dealing Milan Lucic. So I think what you had there was an underachieving player who was in the final year of his contract, who didn't seem motivated, didn't seem like he was, you know, engaged like he was the year they won the Stanley Cup. So I thought it was a heck of a move. Get him out to a team like L.A., where now he's with Dustin Brown and Kopitar. Guys, you know, obviously they're going to account for him, and he's played well out there. I'll give him a lot of credit for that. So I'm not worried about that. I thought it was a good move for both teams. When Luch is, like I said, when he's properly motivated, he's a great power forward. He's been more of a setup guy than a goal scorer in his early time with the Kings. But the Bruins got Martin Jones and Colin Miller as part of that deal. Then, of course, they flipped Jones to get more draft picks and prospects from the Sharks. So if that deal would have happened 2 years ago, I would have said they're nuts. It happened now. I'm glad it did, because he needed a change and the Bruins needed a change.
Exactly. Well, hey, Zig, we're actually just about out of time for this edition of Sponsored by From the 300 Level. I do appreciate you coming on, man. It's been fantastic, and I hope to get you on maybe in a couple weeks or so.
Frank, any time, man. Always good to be with you, my man.
All right. Thanks a lot, Zig, and thanks for joining us tonight on Old Time Hockey. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a good week, everyone. Thanks, Zig. Much appreciated.